Hi, my name is Jan. I'm an alcoholic. First, thank you for having me tonight. It's a pleasure and an honor to share with you guys. My sobriety date is March 8th of 2004. And today, actually, we celebrate our birthdays at my home group. We meet at noon on Saturdays in Lafayette at a little clubhouse there. And so I was joking about that being a drunk's dream. I get to talk about myself all day today. And double dip, too. So let's see what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I always think of my childhood as the alcoholism, my disease, before I put the alcohol into my body. In the big book, it describes us, you know. We were talking about that. Actually, I got to meet and speak with some of you guys before the meeting about the egomaniac with the inferiority complex. That's me, you know. I could be, you know, puking in a ditch, and I'm better than you still, you know. And, but then again, I know deep down inside that I'm less than. And I remember from an early age, like, sitting in a classroom and, like, thinking, you know, I wonder what they're thinking about me. I think I'm using the wrong crayon, and they're probably staring at me, and they know it. And it's like these thoughts going through my head when, you know, I've learned today I'm not that important. Nobody's really talking about me. you know, what other people think of me is none of my business. That, too, played a big part in the beginning of my sobriety, especially with my first sponsor. But always feeling like something was missing, like everyone else knew something that I didn't know about life, and I arrived here, and I was missing that tool or that speech or whatever everyone else got that they knew how to do everything, and just feeling totally inept, you know. And I guess so from an early age, you know, one of the things that troubles us alcoholics, it says in the big book, and has been, you know, plagued me since I was a child, is relationships, relating to other people. My degree of selfishness and self-centeredness is amazing. and as a child, I remember, like, playing, like, I had this neighbor, and she was, like, a year younger than I was, and she would say, you know, she would come over to the house and want to play school, and I was like, well, you're my guest, so I get to be the teacher, and I would give her an F, you know, and she would cry, and I would be like, don't cry, you know, we're going to get in trouble, and we'll get caught, and then I'd go over to her house the next day, and I'm like, well, I'm your guest, so I'll be the teacher, and I'd give her Fs, and it was like this thing that I got, you know, like, can I make her do this, and it was like, I kind of, like, got off on that, you know, like, can I see how far she'll walk, and, you know, keep telling her to go, and it was like, gave me a sense of like some sort of control, you know, and I love that, to feel like that kind of power, and so that relationship continued, because we grew up next to one another, and it's not cute, it's not funny today, you know, reflecting back on no, we're not that powerful, but what we are here to do and what we can do can affect other people deeply. And to look at that wreckage of what I've done as an alcoholic, it's useful today, but it's still not fun. It's still not to make light of, I guess, to say the least. And so the picture to me of what an alcoholic was my grandmother. She was a successful RN at one time in Hollywood to the stars like Rhett Butler and these guys, and here she was in government housing, you know, laying on the floor in her own urine, and we'd find her like 3 days later, you know, and she would shake and DTs and all that good stuff, and I would think, I will never, ever, ever be like her, you know, and that's the thing. It's, you know, became at one point where I crossed that line, and I don't know when that line was crossed in my disease, that I couldn't make that choice, that I could not say, you know, I'm not going to drink or I'll drink this much. And I'll say, too, once I got into my drinking career, I didn't want to be able to say, no, it wasn't to drink to have a drink. It wasn't to drink to be more social. It was for oblivion. Because I could remember just like always that racking, like nagging, just the, some people call it the committees in the head, just nonstop, like, what is she thinking? Why is she looking at me? What is that guy saying? And I wonder if because of how I'm dressed, they're thinking that probably my family is, you know, not as wealthy as theirs. I mean, just God awful. Is that tiring, you know? And to think so much of oneself is, it's disgusting, actually. And, but there was always that thought, too, of I don't belong here. They'll find out that I'm a phony. I'm a fraud. Because people would tell me, you're very gifted. You're bright. You know, you're going to do these great things and stuff. And I would think, yeah, you know, and go along with it, but think, but they don't really know what's going on inside, and I'm shaken to death. And if they really knew, then they wouldn't be saying these things to me. And of course, I was scared to death too of drinking. I had a phobia from that neighbor of mine. She swallowed some bubbles and she vomited a whole bunch of times, and she kept following me and throwing up, and I kept trying to get away from her, and I couldn't escape it. And I carried this extreme fear of throwing up. So between my grandmother and the fear of vomiting, I held off drinking for a little while because I did not want to do that. But outside issues are part of my story, but I'm very loyal to AA and I respect AA, but they are part of my story, just like, you know, when we read in Bill's and in the other stories in the back of the book where they mention, you know, some outside issues, that's part of my story. Actually, what kicked off my big career, because I can remember having like sips of beer, you know, with some kind of little family deal going on, or a friend of mine, her sister was older and could drive and brought us to the drive-through daiquiri place, and we were cool, you know, in the back seat, and the straw actually went up my nose on a nosebleed, and because we hit a bump, you know, that was me. And I was like scared to death, like, oh my God, if I drink this I might throw up, and let me just go along with it. And so I didn't really, really drink until much later. What happened was, in high school, just all these fears and all this stuff, and something had happened. It was nothing really large, at school, and I wigged out, like flipped out. Like, you know, you wouldn't want to go back to school after you did that in the classroom, kind of flipping out. And so they call me in and they grill me, you know, what did you take? You know, what are you on? And I had touched nothing, had drank nothing. And so they, my parents, you know, being the good Al-Anons that they are, oh, nothing's wrong with our child. It's probably something medical. She's probably hypoglycemic, and do all these blood tests. And I end up at a counselor who sends me to a psychiatrist. And he says, you know, you have anxiety disorder. That's what you have. And he gives me a prescription of something called Xanax. And at that time, that was the first time I can remember that feeling of taking that medication and like, you know, I was like, oh my gosh, like I'm not worried about what you're thinking. I don't care. I am fine in my seat at school. And then I realized if you save up a few doses, I was really fine. And I didn't care what you did. And that was my first feeling of I'm whole. And this, you know, and this is how I'm supposed to feel. And this is how I want to feel. And I want to be comfortable. And I want to be able to look you in the eye and you know, and talk to you. And so from there, you know, I got more courage and the phobia throwing up, you know, once you do it a few times, you kind of get past that. So, you know, just down in, you know, tequila and jumping on the trampoline and vomiting and never, you know, I'll never do that again. The prayer of the alcoholic, you know, God, if only you make the room stop spinning and throwing up, and I'll never drink again, and get up and do it again, you know. My high school was really when my disease really reared its ugly head. I still, when I see people and I've forgotten about it, you know, in the men's process and stuff. There's some things I just forgot, you know. There's just like missing pieces of my life, like sometimes, you know, whole spots and stuff out of order. And I'll run into people and I'll think, oh my God, I haven't seen them since I was in high school. And I mean, I was despicable, you know. And what it boiled down to, I was very violent. I was a very angry person. I would, and this is not to brag, this is just my personality type of what I did and what I've learned about today was like I would hit people in the face, like random people in the hallway, and just hit them. And then, like, because that created this wall and this facade of like I'm, you know, bad and, you know, you can't hurt me. And what I see today, it was kind of a thing of like, if I hurt you first, you can't hurt me. And if you think I'm this, then I don't have to worry and guess about what you think about me. So I build up these walls, and that's relationships, right? You know, that was how I did relationships. If I could do that and pull that off and have this much of a wall, then you can't get in here, and I'll never have to be vulnerable. I'll never get hurt. You know, if I get you first, then you cannot get me. And so I did that, and I actually got asked to leave my school. They let me graduate, sit at home the last couple of months because I had, it was in a blackout rage. I'd also rage like that, you know. I don't know if y'all relate to that. Sober, going to a rage, and you don't even remember what you did. And they were like, you look like a wild animal attacking this guy. And he went to the hospital, and he had a piece of meat missing from him, and he had to get a tetanus shot. And I'm like, really? And they're like, really? And I was like, oh, God. And they said, you know, you can walk with your class if you want to, but they're not so sure. It was around the Columbine time, too. And they said, we heard you had a list and stuff. And I'm like, who are these people? Like, I'd be sitting at home making a list of who I want to get, you know? I'm like, who do they think they are? Like, I would be thinking about them. So I graduated, but I didn't walk with my class. And that's when, to me, it felt like it was on. Because someone, I had been doing theater since I was little, and someone arranged for me, you know, very graciously went through all this trouble and arranged an audition for me to go at NYU. And I was scared to death. I didn't even go, you know. And that's what I look at today, the fear, that level of fear to where you're scared to succeed because you're waiting like for the ball to drop. That's how I always felt. Like, or something was, I was having a good streak. It was like, when's the bottom going to fall out, you know? And so I drink to not feel that, you know, and drink not to think about that. And then, you know, I would justify it and, you know, my family would really miss me. And by this time, I had racked up, you know, a bunch of psychiatrist visits, of course, and depression. And I remember, like, praying at times, just, like, not even, you know, like, after drinking and everything, and after a weekend of just despicable stuff, waking up, you know, we do things that we wouldn't normally do, you know, drinking. I don't have to go into great detail with that, you know, waking up in places and there's people and you don't know who they are. And you don't know how you got there, and you don't know how you're getting back, you know. And so does somebody have a drink so I can, you know, fix this, you know. And living that way and living in fear of just somebody seeing past that I was not so tough, that I was not who I portrayed myself to be, that I just always wanted to be somebody else. And I think at time, like, theater gave me a way to be someone else, you know, to go on a stage and what was it, drunk love? I mean, clap, you know, they would clap and accolades. And I was like, you know, big fish, small pond. So, you know, these little, I'm from Crowley. I don't know if y'all know that place, you know. And so, you know, I go up there and I can say my lines and recite them and everybody, oh, yeah. And, you know, and she's great. And just, you know, and I was, yeah, yes, I am. And And what I failed to realize was, well, there was nobody else doing it, really. So, I mean, I was the only one to clap for. Now that I look at it, I'm like, it wasn't really that good. It was actually pretty terrible. I've seen some videos. Oh, my God. Why did my parents let me do that? And they encouraged it. But anyways, so I'm going to go to school, right? I'm going to go to UL Lafayette, and you know, because it's close to home. And I was... The truth of the matter is, it wasn't, I was enslaved by my disease. I just want to talk today about the freedom in sobriety. I don't ever want to feel like I thought I had no choices, you know? I thought I had no choices in life. Like, my plan was, okay, I'm supposed to go to college, I'm supposed to work, but... You know, what I'll do is, you know, I'm too scared to kill myself. I'm miserable and depressed, and really nothing to be depressed about, you know. But would think, you know, if I'll just keep doing this, and they'll check me into the mental hospital, and I'll come out, and I'll bounce back, and I'll get another job. But I could see myself, I had resigned at one point in my life to this is just what life is going to be like. I had bad luck. You know, the wrong cards have been dealt to me. My life was terrible. I remember at one point I had gotten into a fight at a bar, and they told me, you know, it was a big fiasco. I read the report later. The attorney did to me, actually. And I was like, oh, God, I said that and I did that. And they said, if you just leave, ma'am, you know, we won't call the cops. And I walk out. And there are the cops, and they mace me down, and I'm still fighting, and I wake up in a cell, and then I wake up again in, like, the solitary confinement, you know, cuffed to the chair, and I'm still, you know, raging, and I drank a bunch of Mad Dog 2020, and I was, like, you know, still cursing at the cops and stuff, and so then they came and cuffed me into a chair, and I'm still, you know, barking, and, I mean, just nuts, you know? Like, I don't... It was always like, too, a feeling of entitlement, too. Like, this crappy life I've been dealt, and there wasn't anything bad about it, but, like, I was entitled to so much more, you know, and there's that ego, you know, of, like, and I should show up and not have to work and just get handed this stuff, you know, because I deserve these things, and because I'm so important and so great, and they should know, you know, because I tell them these things, And my first sponsor would say that, like, Jan, you know, they weren't judging you based off your intentions. They were judging you based off your actions. I'm like, but I told them, you know, I was going to be there at 5, and I didn't show up. But I told them I was going to show up. I mean, don't they see that I meant what I said? And he's like, no. He's like, and you're a liar. He was like, until you start showing up at 5 o'clock, I'm going to say you're a liar. You know, when you do it, then I'll say, okay, you did it. You know, he said, and then you want a pat on the back for doing what you've been supposed to do your whole life, you know? I'm like, yeah, I mean, I'm getting it together now, you know? But that arrest resulted in anger management again and Alcoholics Anonymous. So I walk into this room in Crowley of these drunks and to get my slip signed, and I'm like, oh, my God. Just insufferable people. They were, you know, smoking their cigarettes, drinking their coffee, and old, and like all these old men. And I'm just like, oh my God, this is all they have to do with their life. They come here, they see each other, you know, they say the same thing, they recite the stuff, you know, and my God, what morons, you know. And so it was a small group, and you have to introduce yourself. And I would say, my name is Jan, and I'm court ordered. And I was like, you know, show them, because I don't belong here, you do. And they would all, you know, one of them was like, you know, we'll see you one day again, Jan. I'm like, yeah. I was like, good luck with that. And the last time I get my slip signed, this woman, there was like one woman who would come around, like one or two, that's it. And she was kind of rough around the edges. She had kind of been through the ringer a couple of times, I suppose. And she had some sobriety, and she comes up to me, and she's like, So what's your deal? She was like, if you don't drink, then what's your drug of choice? I'm like, look, it's none of your business, and I'm not like you, so get out of my face, and I'm done, you know. And later I ended up in that same room again. They were right. So, of course, my drinking progresses, and I look back at times when I was like had to moderate and control, and I look at times in sobriety of when, if I'm not that spiritually fit, it kind of looked and felt the same way. When I didn't know that that's what I was craving was the drink and the escape when I was moderating. Like, for instance, I mean, I would always end up back with my parents, so I couldn't sit around the house and fat cat it and drink and not work. Like, you know, so I just go and look for jobs and, you know, work at convenience stores. And by the age of like, I was 21. I had like 22 jobs already, you know. The longest one was like a month and a half, 2 months that I kept, and it was always, you know, the boss was a jerk, and that chick at work, she has a problem, and this one had, you know, oh my God, you know, they didn't respect me, and they didn't see, you know, I was the best thing that ever happened to them, you know, and I just walked in there, you know, showed up at work twice, and expect a big reward or something, And so I wasn't very successful at keeping a job. I know some people that are alcoholics that keep jobs. I was not one who could. There's a part, I think that's 12 and 12, that says that, where we sought to get, like, as much pleasure as we could and run away from pain. And that was what I did. I was such a taker. And I don't know if y'all relate to that. It was like if I could get, you know, like, all I could get from you and, like, in life, and just trying to get, and never looking to give back, and wondering why I'm so miserable, you know, and why I'm useless. And I remember as clear as day this guy looking at me, and it wasn't like he was that great as far as his job and stuff, but he said, "God, you're such a waste of space." He said, "You're so smart, and look at you." He said, "You can't even finish a semester of college and you can't hold down a job." And I, you know, of course I came back with a bunch of stuff about him, you know, but like looking back, it was like, oh my God, you know, people saw that, you know, they saw through that. Yeah, I was just taking up space and taking up as much space as I could. So, that continues. Part of my story is that I was never going to get married. I hated kids. I really did. I hated kids. I didn't get them. I guess because they need stuff from you, and I, you know, and I was, you know, going to just, that point of resignation, though, was just like, I guess my life was going to be, I had this cousin who was also one of us, and he tried to commit suicide, and he failed, and then he did it successfully on his second try. And I thought, well, that's just, you know, I'll be like him. I even got, he wanted to be a culinary artist, and he wanted to be a Navy SEAL, and he couldn't keep down a job and stuff, but his dream was to be a culinary artist. And when he died, I had even gotten like a tattoo, like of this fork stuck in me, and like with the date of his death and stuff. And I was like, you know, that's just my fate. You know, if one day I get the courage to kill myself, you know, if this drinking doesn't kill me, you know, maybe one day I'll get the courage to do that. And I'll be just like him, because he kept having to move in with his parents. And, you know, it's the same story, just this repetitive thing. And that was my, you know, just resignation of this is life, and it's miserable, and it's to be endured. It's not to be enjoyed, because obviously I'm not having fun. And so what happened, this one day, it was a bright sunny day, and I was with someone, and it was just like out of the blue, you know, just drinking and in the car, and yeah, let's get engaged. And I'm like, yeah, and we go and get a ring, and a month later we're not dating, and I'm throwing up and I'm pregnant. And I find that out, and I'm like, oh, my God, my life is over. I can't take care of myself, much less a child, you know. And I remember that feeling, too, like finally, like, oh, my God, like seeing but not being able to bear the thought of I'm a, you know, this big child in an adult's body that can't function. And now I'm going to have a child also. And people around me, like once my parents got past the anger of it and the, you know, seeing that I couldn't take care of myself. And I guess they made a decision too that they would be the caretakers of my child. And thank God, you know, for them. They got excited, you know, and everybody's excited. And I know you're not supposed to drink, right? You know, you're pregnant. You're not supposed to drink. And I keep thinking, I can't do that, you know, and I don't know how to stop. And so I moderated, and I was just so miserable. And so I was in and out of mental hospitals and them looking and, you know, calling it all different things. And what I realized today, it was me controlling my drinking. And when I am just not drinking, I'm even crazier sometimes than when I'm drinking, because my disease centers in my mind. You know, I have the allergy to alcohol, but also the problem is not anything out here. It's not even that bottle. It's not that drink. You know, that's my solution. That was my saving grace. Thank God for alcohol that kept me alive for as long as it did, you know, because it made, you know, sometimes, I mean, bearable. And I'm thinking, no way. And so I'm trying so hard to control it. And I'm like, I'm supposed to be happy. I'm supposed to be excited. I'm supposed to be, you know, telling myself, and we can tell ourselves all we want to, you know, all these things. But I could not affect that change and that flip into what I knew I should have been feeling, you know. And so my daughter's born, and she's born early, and I assume that that's probably from just all the stress and the state of my condition. You know, she was born 5 weeks early, and she was in the NICU. And everybody's like, you know, excited. And she, you know, she wasn't too sickly. She just didn't have her lungs fully developed. And so I'm like, oh my gosh, when she comes home, you know, then it'll start. I remember setting like dates too, of saying, okay, when she gets to be like 6 months old, I'll quit drinking. Like I would set up these timelines of, okay, wait, then that would pass and I was still drinking and using, you know. Okay, so when she's one, you know, because then she'll be kind of moving around more, then I'll quit, you know. So I would do those things, and I would mean it, you know. And I could not do it. I couldn't stop. I couldn't control it. And so what happens, the last time, it was in December. It's in December, or it might have been more around Thanksgiving. That part of my life is a very big blur. I have a brother and a sister, and I have this sister who is a powerhouse of a businesswoman. And she comes in, she flies in, and she knows what I'm doing, and she confronts me. And my family comes in, and here comes the tears, you know, cue the tears and the sorrow and the, oh, God, I'm such a bad person, I know, and, you know, I'll never do it again, I swear I'll never do it again, and all that stuff. And they're like, you're going to go to a treatment center, and what we'll do, we'll keep your, you know, if you don't quit. They gave me an ultimatum, and I knew that they were serious, because they'd actually had to do this before, you know. And so I could see, you know, it was the first time I ever saw my dad's this big, tough guy. He's wonderful, and he's silent, and he's the most wonderful man. And he's crying. I never saw him cry. And he said, how could you do this to this kid? He said, you have a child, and you're doing this to her and to us. And I am like not believing that he's crying, you know, never seen this man cry. And so, I mean, there is some remorse, but it's mostly just guilt and shame, you know, and terror, like the fear comes in of, well, what am I going to do if I'm out on the street and I can't keep a job and I can't live, and if they can't take care of me anymore, then what's going to happen to me, poor me, you know? And so they start calling around, and they try to find me a bed somewhere, and, you know, it's tough. You know, treatment centers they're pretty popular places to get a bed in, and we couldn't find a bed. But what they found was an outpatient program, and I started going there in Crowley, and those counselors were like, Jan, you're never going to make it. They were like, I mean, I would tell you that I went to eat at Burger King, and I'd gone to Taco Bell. I mean, just it was so natural just to lie, and I didn't even know why, because that didn't matter. You know, it was irrelevant. But here I was. I mean, I went to Burger King and got a burger, and then I remember, like, they were like, you need to be honest, and I would, oh God, I went to Taco Bell and cooked. And it was like relearning every single thing, but that was not my bottom. I started going to AA, and they introduced me back, and those people are still sitting in the same seats and smoking and drinking coffee, and, hey, I remember you. And I'm like, yeah, I'm here, and I'm an addict. And I could say that part. I was like, you know, not an alcoholic, though. And so what happened was, during this little period of me tossing around the idea of maybe I have a problem with living, maybe a little bit, you know, I come back and I get another desire chip and everybody claps. And, oh, yes, this time it was, you know, I went, you know, to the store and I was hanging around with the same old friend and he started drinking, so I started drinking too. And, gosh, I'm so glad to be back with you guys and just so full of it, you know. Just really so full. Just could not be honest. And really just it's that it had not hit bottom yet. You know, it was not that I could not imagine, like it talks about that jump, you know, that turning point of either, you know, we couldn't live with it and we couldn't live without it. And in some capacities it no longer worked for me. But in some capacity, I could recall, of course, our brain is remembering all these wonderful times we had with alcohol, you know. And that's all I can recall. And remember that time, Jan, that you didn't black out and you walked around and you talked to some people and you were social and, you know, oh, and that rationalization comes in. So, yeah, I'm probably not one. I probably just didn't try hard enough if I try harder. And so I did that for a while. I was going to meetings and these people were, you know, really nice, a little hokey, a little bit too happy for me. I still had like the spiky hair and a bunch of piercings and black and, you know. I don't want to be in the sun and, you know, and that whole, I was so cool, you know, and so to do and so much smarter than all these people where I didn't even own one thing. You know, my parents, I mean, the car was there. My sponsor had to point that out to me, actually, because I still didn't realize that. I was like, they took away my car and my phone and my, it was like your stuff. Like, that's your parents' stuff. And they're paying for it. Are you paying for it? No, but it's still mine. No, it's not. Oh, okay. So the delusion I had, I was so delusional. I don't know if y'all can relate to that, of what I saw myself as. And, you know, my first sponsor, I say a legend in my own mind, you know, I was going to be this big rock star and all this stuff. And you just wait and see one day when I do. And I was just miserable and scared to death and didn't know I was, even because I didn't even know what, like, feelings were going on. It was just always like just chaos, you know, and just creating chaos so that something would be going on so I could deflect, you know, people from looking at what I'm doing and not doing and what I'm supposed to be doing, and avoiding all responsibility at all costs. And so the last time, my final drink, you know, it was March 8th, and it was some outside issues, and there wasn't enough, and I could not get to the point of oblivion, you know. And I'm sitting there, and it's as clear as day. I can see you guys, and I'm like, they were right. I cannot do this. I'm going to have to call one of them and tell them they were right. And so that was my moment of clarity. I mean, that's nothing but, you know, you say that was God, that was grace, you know, because at that moment I could have said, you know, screw it, let me try harder, you know, and not call them. But I had that, I think at that time it was a choice, you know, that God's grace came in and gave me a choice. You can either continue doing what you're doing or accept what these people have been trying to show you and teach you, you know. And I did, and I called. And my parents went on a camping trip with my daughter, and I call and, you know, I tell them the truth that, you know, I messed up, and I get into a detox. And I remember I was still just so full of it. I would come to meetings, and I would just kind of, you know, the parrot in the room, like whatever y'all said, and I thought y'all wanted to hear, I would say it. And that's what I did. And that was enough, I guess, to be willing to be willing. And I still didn't see, and I guess I couldn't see, you know, just how messed up I was and how lost I actually was. But what I had was you people who were happy. And so there was like this little glimpse of what could be of some kind of hope. Y'all had something that I did not have, you know. And I'm saying he as my first sponsor because that group was very small. And what happened was that, man, because there was only one woman sponsoring people and she, I don't know, she didn't really want to have much to do with me. I was kind of rough and I cursed a lot and didn't dress too nice and all those things. So he said, you know what, just shut your mouth and I'm your sponsor. And I'm like, what's talking to me like that, you know? And I was like, okay. I was like, oh, I just said okay, you know? And so we start meeting and going through the book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I don't suggest that about, you know, women with the women, men with the men. But, I mean, God had already arranged this life and this path and this person because I needed that time, and he knew that. If somebody would come up against me, I mean, just slam me. I mean, just, you know, you are so full of, you know, he just like, I mean, and just ream me. I'd be like, I'm sorry. And he's like, yeah, we know you're sorry. You're a sorry son of a bitch. And I'd be like, oh, yeah, you're right. And I would, you know, just like he'd just see right through me, you know, because you, when you're sitting across from that alcoholic, we know, you know, but it's so funny when we come in all new and we're like, I'm going to trick this person, you know. And I mean, we have all the same characteristics and the same thinking and the same crazy stuff. So, you know, the sponsor shakes their head and laughs like, oh, yeah, yeah, that's going to work. Why don't you try that, Jan? Sure. Come back and tell me how it works for you. And little by little, what I did was I started getting honest, you know, and sometimes it was like backtracking and, oh, like I told you about the Burger King and stuff. And I would tell on myself. And that's how I came to start getting this deal. And I really didn't believe, like I had moments in my life where we were raised, you know, in church and stuff. And they had times actually where I was connected to a higher power. I believe that. I had these even like emotional, I mean, deep seat, like conviction, like experiences and different things. But then I think, oh, they're going to know I'm a phony and a fraud and I can't live up to it. Let me go back to drink it, you know, and I would drink it away. That thought of that there was something, you know, bigger than me and all this stuff. And that was my justification was it was for people who weren't so smart, you know, because it was more like religion and it was a crutch and they were weak and, you know, and all that stuff slowly began to kind of like melt away as I sat across from another alcoholic who knew my story, you know, who knew the kind of fear I was in, the kind of pain. Only an alcoholic can know that kind of hurt that we're in when we come in here and I would fluff myself up and they could see right past that here was a shaken little girl, you know, who's 21 years old, about to be 22 and just lost, you know, lost. So it started taking me through the book and it wasn't a choice. It was, you know, I was told, you know, you're going to chair meetings and, you know, at 3 months, and then new women would come in, and look, that's your job, you go, and I was like, I don't know, I haven't worked all the steps yet, and like, well, you know how to do one, two, and three, go, you know, and so, and that, you know, and God knows what to do, because he would send people who weren't sticking around anyway, so I would, you know, fumble through, look, this is the first page, you don't know anything, it's blank, that's you, you know, let's read, and we would, you know, like, I didn't know what I was doing, I was like, and I was, you know, I'd call like, oh, you know what they said they didn't want to meet with me. And they said, blah, 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 blah. It's like, you know, Dan, just call the person one more time and just see, you know. So it kept me busy. It's like, you know, you have a vehicle, so you pick them up. So, you know, I would ride around and grab everybody and we would get some coffee. And I remember I was shaking and all just nuts. I mean, and they would tolerate me and even like tell me they love me, you know. And I would like sit there and eat sugar. Like I'd have those sour straws and stuff and just like at the table, people were sharing. I'm just like, I have a Whopper and like, in like Sour Punch draws. I'm just like getting into their story, just stuffing my face. I mean, gaining weight and just, you know, filling that void because God hadn't come in yet, you know, to replace what alcohol did for me. That was my solution. That was my lifeline. And that sponsor told me, Jan, you'll know you're an alcoholic if when you put the drink down, you are more miserable and more crazy than you were before. He said, do not listen to people who say, come to meetings and don't drink and you'll be fine. That is a lie if you're a real alcoholic. And when I gave up the drink, oh my God, the thinking and nothing to numb it out. And then, oh my God, here comes the wreckage of the past and it's falling up and it's real and it's big and there's people who are angry at me. And I, you know, I could just sit there and have to hear it because I know it's true, you know, at this point. And so that's how I knew that I was an alcoholic. I mean, I got more and more convinced, you know, by seeing, you know, who and what I really was. And I remember they would say, like, call me. And I would call these people like at 2 a.m. just nuts. I mean, I'm wired. And, you know, they're like, if you can't sleep, just read the big book. And I'm like, you know, reading the big book. And you know, all these people are like, oh, I want to be able to sleep. And I'm like, you know, if I got what I deserved, you know, I wouldn't be here. And I wouldn't be, you know, having a chance to even get sober. If I got what I deserved, I mean, my God. You know, because I think I deserve to sleep now. I'm not drinking, you know. And like, no, you don't deserve anything, you know. Who are you? And I got, you know, this big dose, you know, like this spoonful of just humility, you know, just a seeing of how, like, I would have to call people to ask them, like, how to, like, how to pray. How do you pray? How do you, you know, because I really did not know how to live. And as I'm working the steps, yeah, I'm starting to get these spiritual awakenings and people are saying that I look different and I speak a little bit differently, but I'm still doing a lot of the same crazy stuff, but I'm working with drunks and that's keeping me busy and I'm looking for jobs and nobody would hire me. And so a lot of the people let me clean their houses and their offices and stuff. So I did that and I got back into college. At about 6 months sober, I start going back. And actually, I was employed by the university for a little while as a parking attendant and in the little booth. And they accepted me back. And I was even, like, drunk on the job before. And I was like, oh, my God. You know, it's just, like, perfect. I had my daughter start going to daycare there at the university. And I'm, like, at my job, I'd have, like, drunks would come meet with me, like, new women, and we'd have the book because I wouldn't have a lot of stuff to do, and I could do my homework, and we'd sit there and read in the big book, and I didn't always have the answers. I had to call other people and stuff, and but it slowly, you know, things started to kind of, you know, where I could kind of breathe and kind of see, okay, wait, maybe there's something to this. You know, maybe they weren't lying. Maybe they were telling the truth about being happy. And my sponsor and I would start praying for me to find a female sponsor, you know. And at this point, I sponsored somebody, and she we just met like once or twice, and she was beautiful. She was just wonderful, charismatic. I mean, just like she came into the room, and her personality was huge, and she won everybody over. And we got together maybe like once, and I remember I was at school like plain as day, and my sponsor calling me and saying that this girl, Fran, that she had overdosed and died. And I was like, my God. And just then the reality of the disease set in, you know, that I had just seen her. And she said, the last thing that she said to me and a group of people was, you know, I'll call you guys when I'm ready, you know. And thing is, we don't know, you know, like how, you know, how crazy me to spit into my face about, you know, the sobriety thing and to make lightly of it, you know, when it's a serious freaking disease that kills. So I'm working steps, I'm sponsoring people, and I'm, you know, a Nazi, an A Nazi or something. You know, you turn into one of those. I don't know if y'all had that phase of like, if it's not in the big book and you shouldn't be doing this. And, you know, I was like trying to control sponsees and stuff. And it's like, that works, you know. And like, I mean, they're running from me. And I'm like, hey, you know, come back. We're meeting at 5. I said 5, you know, just like my sponsor would tell me. And they were like, you know, because most of them are older than me. I'm this little chick with, you know, no job, living with my mom. You know, I'm like, So I had started working, and I'm back in school, and I mean, what a gift to even get to go back to school, you know, to go back to college. It's like, not everybody gets that chance, and I start showing up at work, and, you know, this thing people talk about, self-esteem, I mean, screw that. You know, we get self-esteem, we get from doing esteemable acts, you know. When had I ever sought to, like, show up to work and not just do my job, but then do something extra, too, and not announce it to everybody? You know, my sponsor would, there was no pages in the big book. We were working steps. There's no page that tells you that, like how to be, you know, how to do your job and then some and not ask for a pat on the back. How to, you know, open the door for someone so they can, you know, and just that kind of thing. And how to be a mom. And people taught me, you guys taught me, and that's what humbles me about this program, showed me how to be a mom, you know, because it didn't say that in the book. So I said, you know, Jan, you have to learn how to be present. When you're in a room with people, and it's something I still have to work on, is you don't talk on the phone and text and all this stuff. You, when you're there, be there. And I got that, you know, because the things start quieting down your head and you slow down some and you're like, whoa. And then I'd get scared of, like, when there was nothing going on. I was like, I don't know what I'm feeling because there's nothing going on and I'm think I might be happy, but I'm not sure. And it's like, yeah, that's called peace. Enjoy it. And I'm like, it's very uncomfortable. I'm used to chaos, you know, and learning how to live in that. And slowly, you know, I started to look a little bit more presentable. And I got asked out by this guy in the program. And I had about 7 months sober. And we've been together ever since. And he's my husband. And so I got married and this daughter, you know, I remember just one day, just like she's sleeping next to me, and she was sick a lot when she was little, and AA would come to the hospital and stuff and you know, bring meetings there because I couldn't leave. And I started dipping instead of smoking because I couldn't leave the room. That was cute. And they would just show up, you know. And I was like, what is wrong with these people? They just show up and everything. And they would, you know, do stuff for her and bring me Grapevine subscriptions, you know, so I could read and, you know, because I was still shaky and stuff like that. And she's sleeping next to me. And there's this child who goes 90 to nothing. She's amazing. And she's sleeping, and it's the most beautiful thing I ever saw, and I fell in love. Like, it hurt, and I was scared because, like, my heart just was, like, so full. And I remember sharing that and thinking, oh, my God, how can I love somebody so much that it hurts right now? And learning to be a mom, and I graduated in theater, and I'm like, what am I going to do with a theater degree? But that's what I do. And learning I wasn't so great, but actually being teachable in college also. And doing some good work and stuff. And what came to be was, you know, after some time, my husband, he has three boys. So I got a family of four. And we have ages 9 and 12 and 15 and about to be 21. And they're amazing, you know. And that's the little girl that he always wanted. And that's the dad that she always needed, that God had already chosen for her, you know, and for us. And I was learning how to be a wife, you know, and learning how to be in a true partnership, you know. And my sponsor, Daphne, you know, I'd call her a lot because she had a blended family and she was married. And she would just talk to me about, you know, just Jan, you know, go and pray and you be, you know, as good as you can be, and you try, every time you show up somewhere, you try to see what you can bring instead of what you can take away. And from that, and from working with others, I started to get happy. You know, it was from the giving that I started to get full, and I didn't feel so empty. And that's God. you know. That's all I can say that that is. In that relationship, I was like, oh, I can't meditate. These people talk about sitting on their porch for like an hour, and my mind won't stop for an hour. And meditation works different for different people. When you get there and you get to that step and you're working it, you find what works. And sometimes something works for me for a while, and then it doesn't anymore. So then, you know, dig deeper, you know, work the steps again, peel some more stuff away, and see what I can do. Because it says in that book that the purpose of this book is for us to find a power greater than ourselves, because I lack that power. Because if I could have been a good mom, if I could have been a good friend, if I could have been a good employee, I would have been, you know. And my Daphne, she tells me that often, my sponsor, she says, you know, Jan, everybody's doing the best they can with what they have. And I'm like, there's no way, because they know when they go to meetings and they're, you know, still doing all that stuff. And she said, you know, they can, but until you know it at your core, you'll start acting like it when you know it. So they may know it up here, just like you know some things, but when you know better, you do better. And so life today has taken on a new meaning. I teach talented theater. I'm a teacher. I have a bunch of students, and they're amazing. And sometimes I need reminders about that. I went through this neck surgery this past year and recuperating from that. And it was supposed to take 6 weeks, and it took 6 months. And my husband had him remind me, like, you know, 4 months ago, I need assistance to walk. I couldn't walk by myself, you know. And, of course, I'm like, I should be here by now, you know. And the people that showed up, not just AA, but I believe in, we're not just here anymore for the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. Once we get that, then we go out and we give back, because we've taken so much, or I have anyway, from the world. And so see what I can, you know, so now I'm part of this theater company and, you know, active, you know, like friends with the neighbors. We have a neighborhood, and when we sit down at the table and we say grace together, and our little Motley Crue is, you know, at this table, and it freaks me out. Like, oh, my God, if I would have gotten what I asked for, I would have screwed myself. I would have missed out on so many things. And the joy that I derive from the things that I despise, because at that was fear. It's all fear-based, a life of fear. You know, so still today, it's like, I mean, if I have some kind of, it's, I love that part in 12, it's always worded so wonderfully. You know, when our instincts, our defects of character, when they come out, it's either because I feel like I'm not going to get something I feel like I deserve, or I'm going to lose something I feel like I already have. And I can always point to, what is it I think I'm going to lose, or what is it I think I'm not going to get that I think that I need? And it boils down to that. I can point it out and say, oh, God, you know. And it's a thing of a not trusting a God. And I've taken back over, and I've started running my life again, you know. I had like some hard, nasty, ugly-looking bottoms in sobriety, you know. I'm a person whom Alcoholics Anonymous, the principles, the steps, in, you know, they're based off of principles, and principles don't fail, you know. They're solid. And if I'm living the principles, then not only do I not drink, but I'm also happy, joyous, and free. And so now for me to not be happy is like unacceptable. Because if I were miserable, I would go back out and drink. I'm sorry, guys. Like, you know, being an alcoholic that I am, even if it wasn't working, I would keep trying until it worked. You know what I mean? I would keep on and keep on and keep on, because I just do. It's a promise in there, not only, you know, that freedom from drink, but, I mean, the bondage of self. No longer am I enslaved to my mind and my thoughts, and what I think does not control me, and it doesn't matter what I think. It matters what I do, and eventually that thinking will change when followed by an action. And just doing, like, different actions, I mean, and picking up the phone and, I mean, it being the highlight of the day for somebody to call me. You know, this woman had called me this week, and I was about to go into one of my schools that I go into, and I just stop, and the sun's shining, and I like the sun now. It's a good thing. And I'm talking to her on the phone, and I'm fully present. And she's telling me about herself, but she's talking about me, you know, because it's that language of not only alcoholics, but really and truly of human beings, you know, not just to be able to relate to an alcoholic, but to have some sort of feeling of, you know, it's not just exclusive to us drunks that we feel these things and we have these fears and we regular human beings do. It's quite a blessing, actually, to be an alcoholic, that I get to hit that bottom so hard and so ugly that I have these tools. And it's cool because, like, it works in all cases. You know, we've been through some tough times, you know, financially. We've been through some tough times, like, you know, in fear of the job. And I mean, this job just came, like, straight from God, like, for me to be an educator in theater using my degree, you know. And so that way, you know, in the summers, I get to stay home and we have all of our kids, you know. The oldest moved back in with us, and it's an amazing thing when he had gone the other weekend. Just so proud of him. He's living with us, and they're all so neat. They you know, he calls me, and he's like, I'm on my way home from Houston. I'm like, do you have a good time? He's like, yeah. And he was like, you know, I was just wanting to know, I want to cook for you guys. You know, I'm like, gosh, what did I do to deserve this? I didn't do anything to merit this, you know? And that's where God is so freaking gracious for a drunk like me. That I have, you know, four kids, and we don't use the word step in our house, you know? And they're cool with that. And they were the, you know, we're the people, the right people for them, and they're the right kids for us. And what we do works. And when I'm wrong, you know, especially in times with my husband, you know, I'm able to admit that, I'm able to look at it and sit back and see, like, where can I grow? Because it's not that I feel, for me, points a stagnation, and maybe, I don't know if y'all can relate to that, like getting stagnant, like where the prayers just seem like words, and so I go and I switch something up, or maybe there's some little area that's cropping up that I'm not dealing with the best way, and so it motivates me to take a closer look, to do some more step work, and then to, like, discard it, and something new and cool comes in. And God, you know, gets to fill that hole and teach me something new. And in my interactions with people, it's crazy. It's cool to have that many people that care so much. When I was going through that surgery, it's not only Alcoholics Anonymous, but different people from the community come in, and, like, I couldn't do stuff. And my husband, during that time, too, he became an Iron Man, and that was so awesome. And that man is so amazing. Sometimes I still just, I think I'm like living a dream that, you know, is unreal and I don't deserve, because he's amazing. But he's busy and, you know, doing stuff with the kids, and he's a phenomenal father, and teaches me how to be a parent. I think we go pretty well together with parenting and stuff. And these people would come and clean our houses and cook for our kids. And, you know, I had, you know, one time somebody come and, you know, just and pick our daughter up from school, and we couldn't. And it's like, what, you know, what did I do to deserve this? You know what I mean? Like, for people to care that much. And I hope, you know, that I'm able to demonstrate that and give back. Just, I mean, that's how I feel. Like, I feel just so indebted to this program. It's like, who am I to say no, you know? When you guys called me, it was like, what? They really call for me? You know, it's like, it's like, yeah, we'll go and we'll have a great time, you know? And I thought, you know, it talks about us getting rid of all these defects of character and the hole in the donut. And I thought that I'm going to be like dull and my life is going to be boring and I'm going to be like devout and I'm going to be like all, you know, nobody wants to talk to me because I'll be like a holy roller or something like that. And it turns out I'm a lot cooler sober than I was and I thought I was when I was drinking, you know. It wasn't cool at all. And I've gotten to make amends to a lot of those people. Have been gracious enough to accept the amends and to let me make that right through sometimes doing something, and then sometimes just by living amends. And my first sponsor would always say, you know, Jan, you may be the only big book that somebody ever sees. And I was like, oh, that's scary, because that means like I have to, you know, behave and do things responsibly and like somebody's watched me. But no, but that's a really cool gift, because never, once that spiritual waking has occurred, I am no longer lost. I have an answer. You know, everybody in here that has sobriety, worked the steps, and has recovered is a person with an answer. It may sound very arrogant, but it's all in that book. And then it tells us, you know, if not, we consult other people. So there's no walking around anymore. What is my purpose? What is my, you know, go work with another alcoholic. You'll see, you know. What do I need to do? What decision do I need to make? Pray about it. Do the next right thing. It'll turn up, you know. I mean, my prayers are sometimes as this, as such, like, you know, God, I really don't know what to do. It's, you know, I feel very lost. You will have to make it so very clear for a dumb drunk like me that it'll have to be like a sign on the wall or something where I'll know what to do. And he'll be gracious enough to do that, you know, to where I think with the right heart and the right spirit, when we do as we think he would have us do, that he grants us that those promises, you know. And today it's no more of, oh, yeah, I'll try better next time. No, I have a process by which to work that through and find a real answer, and God could come in and affect that change in me. If I could have changed myself, I would have done it. And there's nothing today that I have to do. I get to do everything. I didn't have to come speak. I get to come speak. I didn't have to get married. You know, I got married, and I got so lucky, and I got so blessed. I have this rich life that is anything but dull. If you hang out with me, I don't think, you know, we'll have some fun. I don't think I lost that that spark. I think it's actually brighter now, because it's not my own. It's God. And thank you guys for having me tonight, and thank you for letting me share.